get underway and turn on to the post-implementation review. So Michael,
okay.
You going to
kick
off?
I'll just kick off. Today we want to bring you the topic of the post-implementation review of IFRS 3 business combinations. We spoke to you in June as we were just in the process of completing the segments review, which was our first one, and we introduced the fact that we were starting on our business combinations review. We're partway through the first phase of that, and so as part of that phase, we wanted to talk to you about what we've heard so far. Marielle is going to take us through the slide presentation, and then we've got some questions for you at the end.
Thank you very much, Michael. Good afternoon to everyone. The purpose of this session is to update you on the post-implementation review of IFRS 3, which is the standard that deals with business combination accounting, and as well as to ask you for additional feedback that we would like to consider and we should be considering during this review. As you know, while post-implementation reviews are a mandatory step to the ISB due process requirements, in fact, each new IFRS or major amendment needs to go through this process. And the due process handbook as well establishes how do we deal with post-implementation reviews, and it basically describes that each post-implementation review consists of two phases. The first phase, we identify the main issues that were challenging or that were controversial when the standard was developed, and as well issues that were learned by the ISB after the standard had been published. So this is the framework that we have in place to undertake post-implementation reviews. The post-implementation review of IFRS 3 is the second one. The first one was IFRS 8, operating segments. And the staff started discussing this review with the board in July. And the slides that follow basically describe and give you information about the main matters that will affect this post-implementation review, which is, for example, the scope of the review. And at the July meeting, the board tentatively agreed that the scope of this review should include everything that came out of the business combinations project. The project had two phases. In the first phase, IFRS 3 2004 was issued. In the second phase, IFRS 3 2008 was issued. So these two standards are going to be within the scope of this review. And the board also tentatively agreed to include amendments that came out of those standards to other standards, such as IS 36, IS 38, IS 27 at that time. So this is an ambitious, very ambitious scope, as you might realize. And as I was saying then, we also discussed the timing of this review, and we started the first phase in July, June, July this year. We are aiming to finish this first phase in November, December this year. And this first phase consists of assessing, identifying the main challenges that entities face when implementing the standard. It finishes with a request for information, which is a document that will be published for public comment, and we will leave there 120 days, and this will lead us to approximately April, May next year. Once we publish the request for information, we are starting the second phase of the review in which we will undertake further outreach, and we will analyze, of course, the answers received on the request for information. And with all this input, we will then submit and publish a feedback statement that we aim to publish in the third quarter of next year. We are going to give you now a bit of more granularity of the consultation activities that we have been undertaking or that we will be undertaking during the next few weeks in relation to phase one of this review. And as you can see here, we have been talking, and we will be talking to various parties that have an interest in the standard, such as accounting firms, investors, national standard setters, valuation specialists, regulators. We have also started academic research. And we are also gathering input from internal groups such as the Interpretations Committee, such as you today, for example. We're going to be meeting as well this week with CIMAC. We're going to be meeting with the Global Preparers Forum in November. So we are gathering all this input with the aim to go back to the board in November, as we will see in another slide. Of course, you are aware that the standard that we are reviewing, IFRS 3, is the result of a joint effort with the FASB. On their side, they issued FAS 141R. And even though the standards are the result of a joint effort, their corresponding reviews are being undertaken separately, independently from each other. In the case of the states, the FAF, which is the Financial Accounting Foundation, which is an independent body that oversees the FASB, has already finished its review, and they have issued its report in May. At a staff level, at a director's level, what we are doing is we are interacting with FAF and FASB staff, and we have already had calls with them to learn about their findings and to learn about their processes, the processes that they followed when the review took place. And we are doing this as the review progresses. So, as I was saying before, the next forthcoming step of this exercise is going to be meeting in November with the board, where we are going to be sharing the initial assessment of those consultations and activities. And at this meeting, we will also propose a scope for the phase two of the review. So basically, we were going to give a flavor of the main content of the request for information that we will be publishing early next year. And this is really a slide that follows up on a matter that was raised in the June Advisory Council meeting. And the matter raised was whether there had been enough sufficient volume of transactions during the period the standard had been effective to warrant its review. And we have incorporated this, this feedback, this input, into many of our meetings, conference calls, outreach that we have done with interested parties, and we have asked them whether they consider whether enough volume of transactions have occurred to warrant a delay, maybe, of the review. And none of the parties had seemed to think that, indeed, yes, the volume of transactions has decreased during the financial crisis, but this decrease would not warrant or would not be a good enough justification to delay the review. In addition to this, we have gathered, we have had access to data published by the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, and that this data shows cross-border merchant acquisition transactions activity, a number of deals, and value of the transactions for the last two decades. And we have seen that in relation to the data related to number of deals, the level of transactions in 2010 are comparable to the levels of transactions achieved in 2005 to 2006, which are pre-financial crisis levels. So this provides a further evidence that there has been enough transaction activity, even though we are facing a period that shows a decrease. We have also recently, and you don't have it in this slide, but we have had access recently to data that includes in-country as well as merger and acquisition activity. And the trends are very similar. Of course, because we do have in-country activities, the numbers are higher. You need to multiply those numbers by five. But it shows the same trend, and that means that in 2010, the level of transactions were comparable to the levels pre-financial crisis in 2005-2006. And with this, I would like then to go to the questions for the Advisory Council. And the questions are whether you do have any feedback, any input for us to incorporate in our post-implementation review, and if you do have as well any questions on the post-implementation review of IFRS 3. Thank you.
Thank you, Mariella. Maybe I'll lead off first with an observation and then with a question. The observation, one of your earlier slides talked about the coordination between our post-implementation review with that of the U.S., and that the understanding is that both boards would wait until you had each completed the reviews and then compare notes about potential amendments, if any, to the standards. And I just reflect back on our earlier discussion this morning, the point about keeping converged standards converged. We were in the context of interpretations, but I think that sort of resonated with what I sensed a number of council members were saying, is something like that protocol, you know, a formal understanding that there would be a check back before either board took what I would call standard setting action, which to me includes interpretations, is very useful. So that's a vote of confidence. I think that's consistent with what we were discussing earlier. My question is, you responded to the concern we had raised previously about the volume of transactions. I'm just wondering, though, the last few years have been difficult, to put it mildly. Will we be looking at an abnormal period in terms of financial conditions as these mergers and acquisitions have occurred? And is that likely to tease out certain issues and concerns relative to the standards that, but maybe not others that would be of more significance in less stressful conditions? I'm just wondering if there might be the potential for a bias or not.
Well, one of the matters that we have been listening is, for example, the effect of the financial crisis in bargain purchases and the effect on the evaluation of non-controlling interest at fair value. So, yes, it does have had an impact on a few of the areas.
One way or the other, just curiosity.
It might actually be quite interesting to find out, you know, what that effect has been and how the standards has held up in those conditions. Also, I'd note, you know, different parts of the world were affected to different extents by the global financial crisis, so we may see regional variations.
I'll open it up. Any additional feedback, questions regarding FRS 3? Start with you, John.
Actually, really just a follow-up comment on the point you raised. I think in some ways, having had an abnormal market is quite useful, because I think it'll flush out some issues that might otherwise have never appeared until for a decade or more. But I do think that we've seen enough transactions that are, quote, normal, as opposed to bargain purchases, around the world, that you should get plenty of feedback on what it looks like for a normal deal as well.
Thanks, John. That's helpful. Yes, and then...
Just a quick comment that as we know that the business combination under common control is now a research project on the ISB agenda, and for this topic we think it needs to be addressed as soon as possible. So our suggestion is that could you please pay enough attention to the business combination under common control when you are conducting the PI post-implementation review of IFRS 3. Please put the business combination under common control as a topic to this project, because we hope this issue can be addressed and solved in the near future. Thank you.
Want to react to that?
Yeah, if I just respond to that. I'm hoping that what my reaction will be that we're actually doing more than you've asked for, because my suspicion is out of a post-implementation review, the reaction would be we should do something to address business combinations under common control. And so waiting until middle of next year to find out that people want us to do something, we're actually doing it now. And at the moment, the board's reviewed one paper What we're trying to do is to see whether there's always a risk in doing this, but see whether or not we can identify, that we think potentially spin-offs or initial public offerings are the most common one that people have told us need to be addressed, as opposed to internal restructurings. And if we can do that, we're going to try and take one part of it off the project and accelerate that. But there's always a risk, because as soon as you take one piece of it, you don't do it holistically. So, but IOSCO has asked us to have a look at that, and the Emerging Economies Group has been looking at that as well. So we are, we've asked the project manager to do more outreach on that.
Jeff.
Thank you, Paul. Just a question. At a prior meeting of this council where we had a discussion about post-implementation review, the staff had raised some concerns about the ability to get information from the Financial Accounting Foundation in connection with their reviews. I just wonder if that's improved at all. I was at a recent event in New York where one of the trustees was aggressively questioned about why their information is held so confidential, and I've talked to several FASB board members about it. They were very upset that they couldn't even get all the information they wanted from the implementation review. So the good news is that when questioned, the trustees indicated, or at least the trustee that was there indicated that maybe they need some rethinking of the use of confidentiality in connection with those reviews, that maybe rather than having all that input confidential, that there would be an opt-out. As typically for input received to the FASB, it's all public unless someone asks for confidentiality, but it appears that's not what they've been using in this process. But they appear to be very open to reconsidering that. So I hope there will be some movement in the right direction there. But I just wondered if you sense there's any change in the ability to get the information from the foundation. Thank you.
Actually, our last interactions with them have been very open and very good in that sense. We have requested information, and immediately they had to check whether they could give us this information, but finally they have been sending us matters that actually will help us out as well, and we could have some assistance from them in understanding what they look at, what their findings were. We are obtaining this information. So far, so good. We are sharing how those processes work for them, and we are at the same time also receiving some documents that they use to undertake those processes. So for the moment being, I think it's working well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. I have a question about the scope of the project. One of the things that is heatedly debated in Japan is whether the goodwill should be depreciated or not. My understanding is that IFRS 3 2004 made a change and decided not to depreciate the goodwill. The scope proposed to be include both the 2004 and the 2008 IFRS 3. Then can I safely assume that this depreciation of goodwill issue will be examined in the project?
You can assume that it will be examined, but in terms of expectations management, a post-implementation review will not lead automatically, for example, we're going to jump back to amortization. If there are some concerns about the impairment model and how it relates, we're looking at things like how the cash-generating unit might be defined, with interesting feedback on that, because some feedback we've had is that the way people allocate goodwill to cash-generating units, they're likely to be more generous with the ones that they know can absorb more flexibility than others. And then it's the sensitivity of the impairment model itself and also the value relevance of amortization. So I think we'll get a lot of feedback on that, but our expectation is that if it's a major issue, that will then feed naturally into the 2015 agenda consultation, and we'll have to consider that in the light of other priorities. We've got to be very careful about expectations management here.
My understanding is the primary focus of the review is to look at the current requirements and see how they've played out in practice, what sort of practical issues, if indeed that reveals a high level of difficulty, whatever, then there'll have to be further thought as to whether those difficulties can be addressed within the current model or whether it's time to reconsider the model. I got that right? Yeah. Madam Wang.
Thank you. Actually, I have a very small question about whether this review process will lead to some changes to current IFRS 3, because to my understanding, this review will focus on implementation challenges and not errors needs interpretation, and these challenges may be unique to IFRS 3, while maybe others are common challenges among standards like fair value measurement. So my question is that at this stage, what are your ideas about about the review result will have potential impact on current IFRS? Thank you.
I wouldn't want to sort of prejudge what the outcome is going to be, but certainly we're taking a very broad scope at the moment. And for instance, when we're having these preliminary meetings to get input to help us scope the review, we're hearing about some of the implementation challenges that people face. For example, the determination of fair value for intangible assets, identifying sort of customer relationship intangibles, those sorts of things are coming up in some of the conversations that we're having.
And if I just add, one a very practical example is the definition of a business is important because there are different accounting requirements if you buy a group of assets compared to if they meet the definition of business, there are different accounting requirements. So there are, you know, without prejudging again, there are two ways you deal with that. You get rid of the accounting arbitrage by changing the way you account for a group of assets versus a business, or you do some work on defining a business. And we already know so many requests have come to the Interpretations Committee relating to the business definition. So we're pretty well informed going into this about where the sensitivities are. And the question will be, at the end of it, do we have to do some more work on the definition of a business, or do we do work on the accounting requirements around it? What should we do? So we're trying to get input into that. And again, it depends on the scale of this. Is this something that's so big that we need to think about this in light of other priorities? Because we've got a list of projects people want us to do, and we would feed this again into agenda consultation. We have a good active interpretations process that tweaks or just amends slightly in IFRS 3 if we have to deal with issues. We did that with contingent consideration, for example. So that process continues.
Rudy.
I would observe that the parties consulted for phase one, as listed on slide six, looks a little thin from the perspective of preparers. You might want to consider expanding that.
You're not the first one to raise that issue. There are two issues here. One is, it's probably just the headings. There are preparers and there are global preparers, and the auditors are actually really a really good proxy for preparers as well because they've got that, the interface. However, the first phase is a little bit skewed, but deliberately, because I tell you what, the preparers are the ones who are going to write to us with a request for information. So we know we're going to get their views, and the first phase is really efficiency. Are we asking the right questions? Because if we ask the right questions, people respond to those questions. If we ask the wrong ones, then the are there any other issues is going to be massive, and we're going to it's horrible to analyse. So really, we know it's a little bit skewed, but as long as we get the right issues, and preparers have told us about the issues in the Interpretations Committee and so on, we think we're kind of covered. So I hope it's all right.
Certainly not meant to be a bias against the views of preparers. I was probably just reflecting that typically there's not much difficulty getting ample input from the preparer community, more difficulty from some others. All right, any other observations relative to the post-implementation review? I sense the people very interested, not anxious to know the outcome, but it is important, I think, to keep a sense of perspective in terms of what the objective of the review is at this stage. And what we're seeking is high-quality input on experience in interpreting and applying the standard in practice. So, thank you very much for that. I think we are ready to adjourn for lunch. We are scheduled to come back at 1:45. I'd forgotten about that. I'd prefer to eat, to be frank.
You may look better on the photo before lunch.
I'm wondering whether you might wish to resume a little earlier than scheduled, or are you content to, it would give us an hour and 15 minutes if we stick to schedule? Accelerate it somewhat? What do we need? 45 minutes for lunch? Do you want to try for leading an hour? Okay, then we'll be back at 1:30.